You know, historically, I lived a pretty sedentary life. I didn't start climbing until I was 25, and prior to that, had some challenges with drug and alcohol abuse, and had to get in recovery for that. At a certain point, I felt a little stagnant, you know, sitting around the rooms with filled with smoke and doing that thing, and I wanted to do something unique with my life while I had the opportunity to, and I found that in climbing.
When there's nothing to do up in this area because there's no snow, because that's about the only draw left up here in the winter, it really affects some of my, I like to call them support businesses. I feel for my bars and restaurants that are on my lake. We have 5 bars and restaurants that are accessible from our lake where a snowmobile trail runs right up. I mean, they still get my great business from our summer guests that are coming by boat, but I mean, they had no access for our almost 3 years now for snowmobilers, and I know they're hurting.
But the king salmon especially, you know, these fight unlike any other fish in Wisconsin. It's kind of like a deep sea fishing, except right here in the Midwest. So that's the experience. You know, we're out there for 5 or 6 hours, fishing, catching fish, high-fiving, having a good time.
It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. I'm your host, Steve Scafidi, on 620 WTMJ. I'm always fascinated by what we do outdoors, and one of the ways that I celebrate that lifestyle, and I did as a kid too, we traveled to northern Wisconsin. Lots of folks do it from southern Wisconsin or other states in the Midwest, even farther than that sometimes even Canada, believe it or not. Joining us from Birchwood, Wisconsin, in northwestern part of the state of Wisconsin, from the Fred Thomas Resort, Ted Tellitz is joining us. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So tell me about resort life. I can remember doing this as a kid, going, getting the boat, going fishing, having the campfires. This is 2025. How has it changed, or how, maybe more importantly, how has it not changed?
That would be more accurate, how it has not changed. You still come up and enjoy the great Northwoods experience of getting in your car, getting away from the hustle and bustle of city life, and just coming and getting away from things and doing some fishing, you know, on the lake, the Great North Woods. That's what it's all about up here.
So tell me about your lake.
Our lake is up in northern Wisconsin. It's called Big Lake Chautauq. We've been on it for 100 years. This is our 100th year anniversary. Resort's been in the family the whole time. And it's just been a great fishing lake that we've been able to maintain where we're at, you know. People catch fish on it.
Tell me what kind of fish you're catching up there.
Walleye, pike, bass, crappie, perch are our main go-tos. We're known as the bluegill capital of the world, so there's that.
Nothing like catching a few bluegills and frying them up for supper. So tell me about that area of the state. It's in northwestern Wisconsin, right?
Yep. We're more, I like to say for the tourists, we're closer to the Hayward area. Is the biggest tourism draw around. We're still a small side of Hayward.
Hayward, of course, is like the muskie capital, right? Isn't that what they're known for?
Hayward's known for their muskie. We do not have muskie on our lake for those people who are scared to getting bit by one.
Which was me as a kid. All right, so tell me about your resort. How many cabins? What do people have to do to find out about it?
We have 22 cabins, and you could find out about it at fredthomasresort.com. We've been on this lake for 100 years this year, since 1925, started by my great-grandfather, and it's just been in the family the whole time. We just promote family fishing fun.
As I talk to resort owners across the state of Wisconsin, one thing is, like, really, really clear. It's that that experience hasn't changed that much. Obviously, some technological changes with boat motors and all that stuff. But really, the experience of sort of getting away from it all is sort of the selling point, right?
Most certainly. Hey, if you don't get our Wi-Fi password, you don't have cell service up here.
And you don't need to be on that cell phone anyway. There's a lot to do outside.
Yeah. If you need cell service, you better have a Wi-Fi calling or you're driving to town. It's a real thing still.
So I know that you guys aren't open in the winter, but I know that you've been thinking about this issue. We've had some sort of uncharacteristically un-Wisconsin winter weather the last couple of years. I know you may have some friends in the resort business who have been impacted by the fact that these winters have been low snow. You sort of get away in the wintertime.
Yeah, and when there's nothing to do up in this area because there's no snow, because that's about the only draw left up here in the winter, it really affects some of my, I like to call them support businesses. I feel for my bars and restaurants that are on my lake. We have 5 bars and restaurants that are accessible from our lake where a snowmobile trail runs right up. I mean, they still get my great business from our summer guests that are coming by boat, but, I mean, they had no access for our... almost 3 years now for snowmobilers, and I know they're hurting.
We're talking to Ted Tellitz from Fred Thomas Resort in Birchwood, Wisconsin on WTMJ Outdoors. So what do you do in your free time when you're not managing 22 cabins and doing all the work, the heavy lifting on a resort in Wisconsin?
I like to travel. I travel out west for elk hunting, backcountry snowmobiling, and snowboarding. I try to get up to Canada to do some fishing and hunting too. Just mostly outdoor stuff that I miss out on in summer because it's a 24/7 job. You're on call. You miss holidays and you miss summer stuff, but you get time in the winter.
All right. You told me about the fishing. You told me about your 22 cabins. What's the other best thing about the Fred Thomas Resort in Birchwood, Wisconsin?
That makes you feel like your family that you want to come back to every year.
I love it. Ted, thanks for hanging out on WTMJ Outdoors. At some point, I may try to catch you up there because I've been doing tours of the state the last couple summers, and certainly part of the WTMJ Outdoors plan is to get around the state and talk to resort owners and guides, anybody who's really interested in the great recreational opportunities in the state of Wisconsin. Thanks for taking time on the show today.
Thanks for having me, and swing on through. We got a nice circle drive. You can just do a lap or stop, and beautiful patio. Maybe I'll have a beer with you.
All right, that sounds good. Thanks for the offer. Have a great rest of your summer.
All right, you too. Thank you.
All right, lots more to come on WTMJ Outdoors here on 620 WTMJ. I've been looking forward to this conversation ever since I started doing WTMJ Outdoors. We all live here in southeastern Wisconsin alongside Lake Michigan, one of the Great Lakes. But I got to be honest, it's been a long time since I actually fished in Lake Michigan or any of the Great Lakes. And I thought, you know what, let's talk to somebody who actually does it for a living and sort of lives that life. And joining us on WTMJ Outdoors is, do you go by Captain? What's your title, Mark Herring? What do you go by?
Yeah, Captain Mark. The guys on the dock call me Marky Mark, but
nice.
most people when they get on the boat, it's Captain Mark.
And you operate a 30-footer on Lake Michigan, King of Kings Sports Fishing, a charter service that people can do up to, I think you said 6 people can be fishing at the same time. That's your license?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, the U.S. Coast Guard regulates that, and that's a license that I would say 99.9% of the charters on Lake Michigan all operate with is your 6-pack license.
So when I was looking up the story of like salmon fishing, which I know we're going to talk about, this is something that was sort of introduced into Lake Michigan, right? They started stocking. So tell the story a little bit because it wasn't always like it is now.
Yeah, no, that's correct. So it is a long history. It dates back to like the 60s. And probably even, you know, predates that, you know. Alewives entered Lake Michigan a long time ago in the big freighters. I'm not going to guess as to exactly what year that was. But, you know, those little, the alewives, they're little bait fish. And if you think back and you remember back to like the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, we had those big die-offs in the spring.
Oh, yeah.
Alewives would pile up on the beaches, and it smelled. You know, they use dump trucks and, you know, big bulldozers to clean the beaches. So kind of from the invasion of that invasive species, the alewife, kind of was born this, $7 billion fishery that it is now today with the salmon fishery. So they found, hey, king salmon are really good and really like eating alewives. So back in the late 60s, I want to say it was 1968 or 69, they introduced the king salmon. This is kind of a really broad overview, but since then, I mean, this this huge fishery from, you know, king salmon, coho salmon, rainbow trout, brown trout, lake trout. You know, this whole fishery is founded. You know, the lake trout are really the only ones that were native to Lake Michigan. So, yeah, now we have a world cat class fishery that is a delicate balance. I don't know if I want to call it a science experiment, but it is something that, you know, we have the ebbs and flows and the ups and downs with the bait fish. And obviously the stocking levels need to be adjusted accordingly. So
where did you make the connection to, so saying that you wanted to do a sort of a charter service, you wanted to help people have that experience that you had had? When did that start?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually grew up in Southern California and moved up to Wisconsin the day that Big Blue fell on Miller Park.
Wow.
When my family moved up here. Yeah, so Wisconsin's in my blood now. You know, I've been here 25 plus years. That was, I think, the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I think it was 2 years after that, right when I got into high school, my freshman year, a friend that was a year or two older than me, Brandon, we started driving out to Port Washington. And I was addicted from the very first day. I saw these fish jumping in the harbor. A kind of a funny story. My dad didn't think we were actually fishing for the first 2 years. He apparently was spying on us, thinking we were down doing drugs or something else. And he had his binoculars kind of keeping an eye on us. And I didn't learn this till years later. But anyways, it took me a year or two. And, you know, we really figured it out through networking with the local bait shop in town and just kind of talking to the locals and then just being very persistent. I was addicted. It was in my blood. I just always loved fishing. So from there, you know, I went to college at Concordia University. So my summers, aside from doing sports, I was out on that pier from almost sun up to sundown, really learning the lake. So then shortly after college, you know, I start working, and one of my close friends that now works with you, Josh, he and I bought a boat together. Like, our first boat is a 24-foot, you know, kind of a smaller, but just a great Lake Michigan starter boat, and started in Port Washington, and it was like, from that day on, you know, our passion just continued to grow, and our learning curve was pretty quick on Lake Michigan. I think just from kind of networking with people, we both are in sales and we both like to talk to people, and then you know, not being afraid to try new things. So from there, our learning curve was very quick, and we started kind of catching a lot of fish, and some of the older guys were looking at us like, what are these young guys doing showing up here and start, you know, catching fish consistently? And so then from there, I think, you know, fast forward a couple years, and my wife is kind of watching the bank account. She's saying, hey, I'm kind of watching a lot of money go into this, not really seeing anything come out of it other than some fish dinners. What can we do to maybe, like, offset expenses? And I said, say no more. So she's the one that kind of encouraged me into entertaining the charter space. And, you know, it really grew quickly. You know, there's obviously the licensing and special insurance, and there's a lot of ducks you got to get in a row before you can start doing this. But once I got all that in line and, you know, my passion for the fishing, one, but two, really having an understanding that charter fishing, we're in the entertainment business. So the time that somebody steps on our boat, you know, it's our time to entertain them. We're having a good time. They might only come out once a year or maybe once in their lifetime. So it's providing an experience that, you know, won't soon be forgotten, and a time that's going to be a lot of fun. So that's kind of in a nutshell. You know, I think I'm a unique captain on the lake where I didn't grow up as a first mate. I didn't grow up, you know, with family members showing me what to do. It's kind of been a, hey, you talk to people, you network with people, you make friends, you got to build a big network of people because it is a very large lake. And those fish have tails, and they swim all over the place.
We're gonna really talk about one of those connections in a second. We've got to take a break here. We're talking to Captain Mark Herring from King of Kings Sport Fishing right here on Lake Michigan. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Welcome back. Continue the conversation with Mark Herring. He's the captain and the owner of King of Kings Sport Fishing, a charter service along Lake Michigan's beautiful, beautiful lake. And I guess we were talking about in the first segment, you know, some of the connections and relationships you have with people. And I was reading a great story by my friend Paul Smith, who's been on WTMJ Outdoors, about your connection that you sort of cultivated and developed with NFL Hall of Famer Joe Thomas, who certainly has Wisconsin connections. Tell us about it.
So Joe and I have kind of developed a fishing relationship, as many of my friends and I have. You know, he reached out to me after I had his brother-in-law on my boat a couple weeks prior. And, you know, after that trip, all of a sudden Joe is texting me. And I'll be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about Joe. I didn't know who he was. I've heard the name, but I didn't know much about him. So anyways, he reached out to me and he wanted to take his kids out fishing, and he kind of told me, he's like, you know, they're young, I just want to have a good experience. So if it gets nasty out there, they want to go in, we're going to go in. So, you know, kind of fast forward, I don't think I even got him out that first summer he reached out to me. It was really the next year. And that first time I had him on the boat was a pretty special day. It was a day when, you know, our spring fishing had gotten a little bit slower. You know, the fish were scattering and we were catching a lot of them. And it was honestly a little bit tougher. And then had a friend that found a school of fish, and Joe brought a group of guys out, and, you know, we went south while everyone else kind of went north, and we ended up, I think, killing our 30 fish in about 2 hours. I mean, it was fast and furious, and he was looking at me like, who is this guy? He was out fishing with a friend the day before and didn't catch a fish. And then he shows up on my boat and we caught 30. So we had a lot of fun that morning. It was just one of those, like, wow, that was awesome. And then you kind of fast forward through the last 5 years, he's been coming out, I would say, one or two times a year. And then I think it was in 2021 or 22, he had brought a couple of his guys that work on his farm. We had a pretty special day on the lake. You know, that was the day that, you know, Paul Smith got a hold of it from the Journal Sentinel. We ended up catching a 37-pound king in mid-June.
Which is crazy big, right? That's crazy big, right?
It's huge. Yeah, that was the largest fish to really ever come out of Milwaukee to date. You know, no one knew of anything that was bigger than that.
Huh.
It's not really recorded, but it was like, hey, guys have been fishing there forever and had never heard of one or seen one that big. So that was a special day. It was one of those, you know, it went viral moments. And we just kind of hit it off. You know, every time he gets on the boat, no matter what group he brings out, we just have a lot of fun and a good time out there.
So I want to have you tell people, because one of the things I want to do on WTMJ Outdoors is connect people to some of these great stories and, by the way, great opportunities. And we'll have folks get all the information they need to contact you. But describe the experience. What's involved? What time do you go out? You know, some of the things that are involved in going out on a Great Lakes charter.
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically our morning trips typically start at 5 a.m. You know, it's right as that sun is hitting the horizon. You've got enough light so you can, you know, safely leave the harbor and without, you know, worrying about hitting, you know, logs or things floating. So we're leaving the dock at about 5 a.m. Typically, we're doing a six-hour trip. So we'll leave at 5, and we're usually back to the dock right about 11 o'clock.
Hmm.
During that time, you know, really, you don't need to be a fisherman to enjoy this. It's really just common. I always tell people, I'm like, bring your positive fish-catching mojo. You know, that's just it. You come to have a good time. So you show up, you know, I just tell people, bring a light coat. You know, the weather on Lake Michigan is unpredictable, but we're constantly monitoring that, and we are going to always make the decision that is safety first, right? So we're watching that. Really, we have all the gear, all the bait, everything is provided. So from the time you step on it, it's a fully catered 6-hour experience, and you can do longer. You can do a full 8 hours if you want. And there's some charters that might offer 4 or 5 hours, but, you know, it's 6 hours fully catered. I usually have some music going, and just have a really good vibe on the boat. And then from there, it's, you know, we're traveling to where we know or think the fish are. And we set the lines, and then, you know, when that fish pops off, these king salmon, really all the salmon, but the king salmon especially, you know, these fights, they fight unlike any other fish in Wisconsin. It's kind of like a deep sea fishing, except right here in the Midwest. So that's the experience. You know, we're out there for 5 or 6 hours, fishing, catching fish, high-fiving, having a good time. You know, some people ask if they can bring some, you know, beverages, snacks, some beers. Yeah, everything in moderation, of course, but we're out there to have a good time. So when we get back to the dock, we are cleaning fish. So, you know, we're sending you home with filleted, clean, bagged, hopefully fresh salmon and trout fillets.
All right. Before I get to the how do folks contact you, I got to tell you, how cool is your job? That is like the best job in the world.
Oh, my gosh. It is. You know, it can be a grind. I'm not going to lie. Like, it is an awesome job, and I absolutely look forward to it every single spring. You know, it's a lot of hours. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes. Boats, as many people know, are not they're not an easy investment, and they tend to provide some challenges at times. But my gosh, the smiles, the laughs, the high fives, the memories made on the lake are really what make it such an awesome gig for me. It's really a special thing. So
right.
I don't take that for granted.
Let's make those connections. How can folks get a hold of you and schedule their Great Lakes charters experience?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So I guess the best way would be probably giving me a call. I like to talk to people, so shoot me a call or a text. My cell phone is 262-707-9693. And then, of course, I've got my website, which is kingofkingscharter.com. And then just follow me along on social media. You know, my Instagram, King of Kings Charter, and then also I'm on Facebook. So I would say those are kind of the most popular and most common ways to get a hold of me.
Yeah, and your last name is spelled H-E-R-I-N-G, correct?
Yeah, correct. It's like herring, like the fish, but one R. Yep.
There you go. Mark Herring, captain of King of Kings Charter Sport Fishing on Lake Michigan. I knew this was going to be a great conversation. It's part of what we want to do here in WTMJ Outdoors. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Steve.
Lots more to get to on WTMJ Outdoors coming up after this on 620 WTMJ. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors. Lots of great conversations about the great Wisconsin outdoors. This one, I got to admit, I don't have a lot of knowledge of, but I have friends. My friend Jeremy's big into the inside rock climbing experience. Wall climbing, I guess, is more accurate. But I said, you know, as we're putting this show together, let's find people who are like subject matter experts on it. And we got a good one today. Jacob Crone, President, Wisconsin Climbers. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, thank you very much, Stephen. I'm happy to be here and, yeah, happy to talk about climbing. I love it.
So for those of us who don't climb, other than maybe a tree when I was, you know, 12 years old, what is it about climbing that just has like inspired people to like take this up? We were talking before we started about, you know, how many people are moving into it. Give us some of the numbers. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I think you did hit the point on the head. It's a natural thing to do. Everyone climbed trees. Everyone wants to explore as a child. But at some point, you know, the world gets a little smaller and you get a little bigger, and that kind of adventure can get lost. But I've definitely found that again in rock climbing, and a lot of other people have too. The Access Fund, which is a climbing organization to help access different areas. They're also partners of the LCO, or Local Climbing Organization, the WCA, Wisconsin Climbers Association. They measured, estimated rather, 150,000 climbers in 2000. And their last study of that was 8 million climbers in 2023.
So what happened? Is it because kids are getting exposed to it on those rock climbing walls, or what is it?
I think it's a really awesome balance of perspective and perseverance and physical engagement. For me, it demands my attention so much that my, more scattered brain really, puts everything else out and brings me into that moment.
People have described it to me that do this, both inside and outside, as life-changing. Not one, just from the physical aspects of it. I mean, you're a fit guy. You're in shape. But also just from the clearing your headspace, like getting, especially if you're doing outside stuff, which is we're going to spend some time talking about, it just changes your life, and it changed your life.
Yeah, it absolutely did. Historically, I lived a pretty sedentary life. I didn't start climbing until I was 25, and prior to that, had some challenges with drug and alcohol abuse, and had to get in recovery for that. At a certain point, I felt a little stagnant, sitting around the rooms with filled with smoke and doing that thing, and I wanted to do something unique with my life while I had the opportunity to, and I found that in climbing. I had worked next to a climbing gym earlier on, and I always thought those people looked pretty happy and energetic. I might as well check it out. And since then, it's really been an incredible journey for me. I've been climbing for about 10 years now, and the kind of demand that it takes of the body, your mind, as well as being stable in life, all kind of come together in this really engaging physical movement that just is so motivating for me.
We've all seen and watched these stories of rock climbers. I think it's called free climbing. Just incredible, you know, mountains and peaks that these people, without any really attachment, I can't even imagine what the mental commitment of that is, let alone the physical requirements and just the fear factor. I mean, have you experienced some of that stuff?
Yeah, it's been a really good opportunity in life to practice taking healthy risks. You know, if we don't take any risks, we're not going to do anything that interesting. But all climbing has some risk involved. We use ropes to mitigate those risks or bouldering pads. The first means of defense against hitting the ground is always your movement, but it's fallible. So, you know, we learn to be aware of ourselves and our capabilities and take the necessary precautions to keep ourselves safe.
I want to talk about the inside-outside stuff, but I want to make sure that we talk about your organization, Wisconsin Climbers Association. Tell me about how that started, where it's gone in the time, this rapid increase in interest in climbing, and tell me a little bit of that story.
Thank you, Stephen. We started as an organization around an event called the Boulder Bash, where we got a bunch of crash pads together and brought people together for an event at Governor Dodge State Park. We get a ton of great use out of the state parks in Wisconsin here. And then since then, we became the local climbing organization and a nonprofit. Now we really work in climbing access and stewardship, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We have a grant program through that, which we've probably given about $10,000 through, and and our event planning. And we've done a lot of great work with a lot of great people to make it accessible and fun adventure.
I want to give you a chance a couple times to tell people how they can reach out and find you. So the easiest way to get a hold of you guys?
You can send us an email at info@WIClimbers.com. Otherwise, you can search for us online at Wisconsin Climbers Association.
So you mentioned Wisconsin, and some of the things I've seen about climbing involve some of the big, Pacific Northwest, and certainly the mountainous part of the Western United States. How does Wisconsin? Obviously, a lot of people know about Devil's Lake State Park. I've camped there. Are we considered a great place to climb, or no?
Yeah, we definitely don't have the big mountains like they have out west, or at least since the glaciers came through, which was a little before my time. But we have some very good quality single pitch rock climbing in Wisconsin.
What does that mean, single pitch?
That's essentially the amount you can climb with a single length of rope and lower back down to the ground. So climbs are typically between 50 and 100 feet, some of the taller ones being at in Wisconsin areas like Devil's Lake. There are amazing climbing opportunities all over Wisconsin. Our economic impact studies focused on Devil's Lake, but there's a lot of state parks as well as county parks. There's Governor Dodge, Rib Mountain, and boulder fields all over Wisconsin that offer a great opportunities to get into climbing and explore the outdoors.
Can someone be a beginner rock climber, someone who's maybe fit but hasn't experienced what it feels like to climb up a side of a mountain or a cliff? Can you be a beginner in rock climbing, and how does that process work?
Everyone starts somewhere. Like, I wish I would have gotten an earlier start, but it's never too late. I guide professionally, and I always tell clients that as long as you can hike up the steps to get there, you can climb something. After that, it's just about finding the right challenge for you. And there's just a broad spectrum of climbs that you can do.
We're joined by Jacob Krohn, president of Wisconsin Climbers. You can find them at, what was that website again?
WIClimbers.com.
All right. Well, take a break. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. After the break, I got some stories about my grandkids and their climbing, and a funny story about a friend who's building his dream house and has a rock climbing wall in it. I'm going to ask Jacob about that and just the explosion of popularity when it comes to rock climbing. As I said, you're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, enjoying everything that's awesome and exceptional about Wisconsin's great outdoors, recreational things, and hunting and fishing. Today we're talking about rock climbing. My guest, Jacob Krohn, president of the Wisconsin Climbers Association. All right. I told you the story during the break. I have grandkids who are already doing rock climbing. They have them on their play sets. I went to my buddy, he's building his dream house in the city I live in. And I see this large wall in one of his bedrooms, and I ask him, there's a vault, there's a like a vaulted area up there. What's that about? I'm putting in a 20-foot rock climbing wall. I mean,
that's awesome.
You can certainly see like the popularity is like drifting down to little kids. He's doing it for his grandkids. My granddaughter Charlie's climbing up on her play set that has the, you know, the what do they call it, the whole hand holes and the foot holes. This thing is really catching on at younger and younger ages, which I think has to be part of the story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The huge growth in number of climbers is definitely from youth getting into it. Climbing gyms have been a big part of that, but there are great outdoor opportunities all over the state as well. I think it's great for children because it teaches them to be responsible for their actions. You can only watch a kid so much, but gravity's always working. So, you know, if they take a bump, they'll learn from that and know that, you know, you need to make good choices in your life. And that's worked for me really well in other aspects and been a good thing to model. But I think that's something more tangible kids can work with.
Calculated risk, but also safety first and foremost. I think that's my takeaways from just looking at a few things about rock climbing.
Absolutely.
Climbing anything, really.
We're always assessing our risk when we're climbing. And that, you know, if that's in a gym or a home wall made out of plywood or outdoors, we're making those decisions all the time, and we should be responsible like that in our daily lives as well.
You were telling me before we started that you were a part of a documentary about climbing.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work with Heave Ho Productions out of Chicago. They came up and wanted to explore Devil's Lake. My history with alcohol and drug addiction and overcoming that with help from rock climbing was something that they found inspiring, and got to spend 4 days shooting with them, and it was a ton of fun. And we're also using that as a way to advertise our economic impact study with the Wisconsin Climbers Association.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're asking that climbers who are climbing at Devil's Lake through October to go to our website and fill out the economic impact study survey, and that will help us show land managers and people in the government what kind of economic impact our activity has in the communities we participate in.
So you're talking about people who may camp at Devil's Lake or stay in hotels, eat at the restaurants, buy equipment. All that stuff is part of that story.
Yes, all those things are, but we're asking specifically climbers for their impact to better advocate for ourselves as a group in the future.
Your organization and climbers in Wisconsin in general, are they... I know we talked a little bit about the state ranking and how we would fit in. How about the skill level of our climbers here? Are we? I know that there's some competitions. Do you ever get involved in those things?
Yeah, there are some competitions. The Boulder Bash is like a friendly competition, and I've participated in WCA's trad climbing competition, the Alte Classic, a couple of times. As far as the quality and the caliber of climbers we have, one person I think said it best, that when you climb in the Midwest, the grades are stiff and the ground's always close. if you know, you need to place things well and choose your moves carefully, because you're not 1,000 feet off the ground in the Midwest. If you make a mistake, that ground is pretty close to find you. So there's a lifetime of climbing in Devil's Lake, and yeah, some really strong climbers come out of here.
When you're climbing a rock face, and you're, let's say you're 3/4 of the way up, and what's the highest in Wisconsin, a couple hundred feet?
Yeah, 100, 150 feet is about as tall.
What's going through your mind? Is it all technical, or is there like a peacefulness? I always thought, you know, if you're hanging on the side of a, one, I'd be worried about it because I'm not a climber, but two, it's got to be like this moment of peaceful serenity up there, because you're out in nature, you're hanging on the side of a cliff that's been there for hundreds of thousands of years. That's got to be amazing.
Yeah, I love climbing the natural formations. They've been here for hundreds of millions of years, and you know, I get to come back year after year to test my mettle against them. But what I get from that experience is a bookmark to kind of see how my growth has been going, as well as engage with the environment in this very hands-on and very focused aspect. My dad's a truck driver, and I grew up taking trips with him, so I saw a lot of beautiful areas from the side of the road, and taking the opportunity to really get close up and interact with the environment has been just an incredible piece, as well as the activity itself providing that mental focus that can sometimes be hard to get.
What do you think's next for you in climbing?
What's next for me is I'm just going to try to travel and do as much as I can. I ice climb a bit in the winter.
How much different is that?
It's almost two different sports. Fortunately, a lot of the technical systems are the same. So if you learn one, you learn some from the other, but it's a different ballpark.
All right. So I want this to appeal to those who are, maybe they've had the exposure I was talking about where you see these kids play things and now you, every kid's recreational facility puts a wall climb in it. If people want to get involved, like other than obviously, and we'll have you give your numbers out for your association in a second. What should they be thinking about? Like, is there equipment they need? Are there shoes they need? Like, what's the resources, assets they need to sort of start that journey?
Yeah, typically the best access to start would be through a climbing gym. There are a few in Milwaukee, Madison, as well as a new one up in Green Bay. So there's those resources. But if you know anyone who climbs, it takes a certain kind of focus and determination to climb. So usually those people like company when they're doing it. So if you know anyone that you can get connected with, let them know. And, you know, we're a resource to help get people the equipment that they need because we rent bouldering pads. But people are just thrilled to share it with others because we see how much it does for us in our lives.
Real quick before I let you get out of here, what do you do when you're not climbing?
I'm going to school for massage therapy. I graduate in June. I'm looking forward to that. I was the prior owner of Apex Adventure Alliance, which happy to pass along to the team manager there, their guide service out at Devil's Lake. And I am trying to do as much as I can in my year term as president to really open up climbing opportunities for Wisconsinites and make sure that they remain available for the future generations.
Thanks for joining us. Jacob Krohn, President, Wisconsin Climbers Association. Real quick, where can they find you?
You can find us at WisconsinClimbers.com or search for us online at Wisconsin Climbers Association.
All right, what's your going away message about climbing? What do they need to know? Real quick.
Keep exploring and believe that you can do it because you probably can.
Awesome message. Thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Yesterday. Thanks for tuning in to WTMJ Outdoors, Episode 2. Had a lot of fun. On today's program, we talked to Mark Herring. He's a sports fishing charter captain. King of Kings is the name of his business. Lots of exciting things happening on Lake Michigan, our Great Lake, of course. We started the program talking to Ted Tellitz from Fred's Resort, resort owner in Wisconsin, Birchwood, Wisconsin. I think it's up there by Hayward. Lots of cool things happening in those sort of old-style resorts and campgrounds in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about camping on a future episode of WTMJ Outdoors. And then we ended the show with Jacob Krohn from Wisconsin's Climbers Association. I learned a lot about climbing, and Jacob is a great example of someone turning their life around, really, really resetting his course, if I can use a nautical term, going back to our conversation with Mark Herring. And he straightened his life out, but more importantly, he's sort of re-energized Wisconsin climbing. Devil's Lake State Park is where he does a lot of his climbing. So thanks to all of my guests on WTMJ Outdoors. If you have a guest suggestion, or if you're a resort owner, or any of the fun things we do outdoors in Wisconsin, just send me a quick email to steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D at WTMJ.com. Love to hear from you. We'll include it on a future episode of WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.